And welcome back to Cinema Vino. Got Sean Jordan.
Hey.
Taylor Owens.
Hello.
And also Travis Budd.
Why'd you save me for last?
Save the best for last, man.
I think it's alphabetical, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you do the cherry on top of the sundae last, am I right?
All right. You know, just get it going.
I actually do my cherry right after the ice cream. I go ice cream, cherry, whipped cream, chocolate, nuts.
Interesting. I like that.
I like to leave myself a surprise in the middle.
Yeah.
Don't we all?
Yeah. And that was the theme of our prom. So
nuts.
A surprise in the middle.
Oh.
Yeah. So we're going to talk. This is part four of our baseball series. Quite different than the movie we did last time with Sandlot. So we're going to change gears.
The old fourth inning.
Yes, exactly. This is beer number four of the evening. But first, we're going to talk a little bit about the vino. So stand by on that. So last episode we did a white wine. This time we're doing a red. We're going to do a wine from the Beaujolais region, a red Gamay. This is the Clos de Carte Vint.
Not a real what? Say it again.
How's your French today?
It's shaky. It's up and down.
It's Frenchy.
it's definitely a roller coaster in terms of quality. Clos de Carte Vint. So, which all sounds like stuff that you do in Baccarat, but I could be totally wrong about
it. It looks like Des Quatre Vents. Exactly. There you go. Yeah. You're looking it up at home.
That's Oklahoma. That's chili con queso.
Close Des Quatre Vents.
So Beaujolais is a region in France, and you'll see different villages there, and they have different...
Village,
yes. And so this one is from the Fleury region.
And it's not a true champagne unless it comes from the champagne region of France.
That's exactly right. A cookie's just a cookie, but Fig Newton's fruit and cake.
I will say, you have turned me on to Beaujolais. Like, since we've done this podcast, like, I've found Beaujolais to be very enjoyable.
Yes, they're quite good. They had a bad reputation for a long time because the Beaujolais Nouveau comes out in the third week of November, and people associate that's a very quickly made... sometimes very cheaply made rapid wine, so it tastes very disposable. And so Beaujolais kind of have that reputation as being very cheap, disposable red wines, and not always fair. There's some good Beaujolais out there, and there you can drink them with a chill. Again, if you're food friendly, holiday friendly, they're lunchtime. It's known in France as a picnic wine, so
a little bit lighter, fruitier.
You could definitely
take a little bit louder
now. Yeah. You could take this to a ball game easily, or, I mean, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Out, if you're grilling out, you could do this with a lot of different grill foods, so.
Grilling out with the Beaujolais.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Bad and Beaujolais.
Bad and Beaujolais.
So this is perfect for watching a baseball movie. It's a good warm weather wine. You know,
this one's good. It's sessionable.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I could drink this whole bottle on my own.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not crazy high in alcohol. They're usually around 12%. Unlike some of the other reds, like I think the one we had last week was like 14 plus.
Yeah.
So these are easier drinking.
This one's 13.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just a good red, you know, table wine kind of a thing.
Travis, you
ready? ASMR break. 3, 2, 1.
Well done.
It's a delicious Beaujolais.
Yeah. Yeah.
The French are starting to can their Beaujolais. It's a very good vintage.
So yeah, we did this actually finishing up our previous podcast on the Sandlot. So we have moved on to some beers, which are also, I mean, to me, the definitive baseball beverage.
Yeah.
We are drinking the White Claw Surf.
Sean and I are doing, the White Claw Surf, provided by my lovely wife, Jo.
Which ties into France, because French, they had a lot of surfs.
And yeah, even though you just said French.
French. That's how you know the wine's good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the Oklahoma / Texas creeping in there.
That's right.
That's the French
toast.
And I helped.
Sean and I drinking. I'm doing the citrus yuzu smash from White Claw, and he's doing the tropical.
Fucking with the tropical pomelo smash.
So delicious.
And I think Taylor, you're drinking the.
I'm drinking the Miller Lite, the fine Pilsner edition.
Quite delicious.
And then I saw Taylor do it, and like anything he does is cool, and I wanted it to be cool.
That's actually true.
So you got peer pressured.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Taylor's hair is gorgeous though, and I have little to none left.
Taylor's really like carrying this podcast on hair.
I will give you my hair.
No.
When I die. Wait, no, just my chest hair.
No.
But not the curly ones. Them's mine.
And I was like, Trav, you got some delightful beard hair, though.
Oh.
Yeah. It's nice.
Yeah. Is it a beard if it doesn't grow everywhere?
Can we just go around the table and say one thing we appreciate about everybody else?
Yeah.
You appreciates me?
That's what I appreciate about you.
Mm-hmm. That is our wine. This is probably a $20 to $25 Beaujolais, a little higher end. A lot of times you'll see Beaujolais kind of in the cheaper area. The straight up Beaujolais, you'll pay around $10 or $12 for. The Villages could be 15 plus. And the Villages is going to be like a blend of multiple villages. And then you'll see specific like Morgon, Brewery, Fleuret, specific villages you'll pay a little more for, 20-ish, 20 plus. So this one is the Fleuret Clos de Carte Vint. So that's that's the best French I can give you right now. I'll take a picture, send movino.net. You can see, and you can try to pronounce that for your own self.
This podcast does not do well in France.
Not yet. No, there's a lot of French people who just rolled their eyes at everything I just said. So, you know, my accent needs a little work.
There's a lot of Spanish people that roll their R's.
Well, I prefer freedom fries anyway.
Thank you, Travis. Now, this is from the Georges Deboeuf, which is a big old winery in France. They do beaucoup bottles.
Georges Deboeuf was my favorite president.
So that was our wine. So now we're going to talk about our movie. So stand by. So this time around, we're going to talk about Moneyball. Totally different than The Sandlot.
The segue makes me feel like I'm in a public sector.
Yeah.
Or no, public access television show.
Exactly. It's like Aurora, Illinois.
And one of the riffs are going to be taking calls.
Wayne's World.
One of the riffs earlier sounded like Free Fallin'.
Yeah. I mean, kind of same key, I think. So both in the key of D major. So
both in the key of love.
Yeah. So we're going to talk a little bit about Moneyball. I've got some notes here. Came out September 23rd, 2011. So two very powerful writers did the screenplay. First, initially written by Stephen Zalian, who won an Oscar for Schindler's List, but also wrote Gangs of New York, Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, just a very famous...
The American or the Swedish screenplay?
He did the American version of Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
Oh, okay.
And then the second, the rewrite was done by Aaron Sorkin. Obviously, West Wing.
Oh, yeah.
A Few Good Men, Social Network. He came in and basically rewrote Stephen Zalian's draft, which ironically, supposedly, is how Schindler's List worked. Stephen Zalian wrote the initial draft of Schindler's List. Aaron Sorkin was brought in and did an uncredited, what's called a dialogue wash. His job was basically to help trim off the dialogue and help smooth it out. So they previously did some indirect collaboration on Schindler's List. So they've done a movie together before.
Huh.
Based on a book by Michael Lewis, who did The Big Short and an assortment of other stuff that's been made into movies. This went through a long development through several years, multiple directors, including Steven Soderbergh, who I've never been particularly wild on. But he did Ocean's 11, Ocean's 12, and I believe Ocean's 13.
Uh-huh.
The Holy Trilogy.
Oh, yeah.
He did Out of Sight, which was a pretty good movie with George Clooney.
I will say that. I did like that one.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I ever saw that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, with J-Lo.
J-Lo.
And her butt.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. His camera did enjoy filming J-Lo's butt. Mm-hmm. I will say that.
Mm-hmm.
And then he won an Academy Award for the movie Traffic. With Benicio del Toro
and the coochie eating guy,
Michael Douglas.
There you go, Michael Douglas.
I was like, close of Savinia.
Savinia. Okay, so this. I was hoping somebody picked that
Brown Bunny.
Yes, which I believe Roger Ebert gave that movie 0 stars.
So Dwight Yoakam.
I never saw it. No. Just saw the scenes.
Yeah. So this follows the true life story of Billy Bean, who was a journeyman major league player.
Billy Bean.
Who becomes the GM of the Oakland A's. And 2002, he gets frustrated by the budget limitations of ownership. And so he eventually links up with a guy. This is a composite character, Peter Brandt, based on some real people. Ah. Played by Jonah Hill, who is an Ivy League educated CPA, who introduces Bean to sabermetrics, or basically number crunching, to find the purest way to get runs on the board, basically, and to win games. So for cheap, you know, rather than doing the traditional model of using scouts to bring in talent and put together a winning roster that way. So, and they achieve success. They kind of radicalized sports and scouting and the nature of building a team that, yeah, that has influenced not only baseball, but other sports as well. Yeah. So I'm a big Thunder fan, and supposedly the GM of Thunder is a big guy into sabermetrics and number crunching and stuff. And so,
how has that worked out for them?
A lot of draft picks is all they care about, apparently.
Yeah, so, yeah. Yeah, they've got
that's why their best player was Kendrick Perkins for years.
that was just sheer number crunching.
Yeah,
didn't they say they were like, yeah, what you see Perk Alert doing isn't actually all that he brings to the team. He does a lot of behind the scenes. He's got some leadership. He's got some morale.
Kendrick Perkins kind of breaks that whole logic because it's like,
yeah,
there's no numbers. Like you say,
yeah.
I mean, the guy would airball free throws pretty regularly, you know.
But he would start.
Oh, he started. Yeah. He would dribble the ball off his foot. I mean, there's stuff you can't quantify.
Intangibles.
Yeah.
He's got them intangibles.
He could elbow people in the side of the face really well. So, and that's underrated. And God, he was on ESPN the other day. He was the scowliest dude I've ever seen. Yeah. He's getting scowlier as he gets older. Yeah. So Moneyball grossed over $110 million at the box office. It was a pretty big hit given the nature of its subject matter. We discussed this in the previous one episode a little bit, that this is almost like the anti-sports movie, anti-baseball movie. It kind of deconstructs the mythology of baseball, brings it down to sheer numbers, brings it down to the spreadsheets, you know.
Yeah, there was a scene in this film, you know, when they're talking to all these scouts and they're just like breaking it down, though. There's, you know, you're saying like, no, this is not it. We're going off this. Like, oh, we're going to, I forget the line, but like,
trust the numbers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's like, we're going to pick this guy up. Nobody likes him because he's a sidearm pitcher.
You know, yeah. No, I don't like the weird, it's a weird throw. Weird thing. You know, like, we don't like the look of it.
He's like, yeah, but he's one of the best relief or whatever it is. It's like his numbers. No. So
he gets on base.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and yeah, it sets up in the movie, you see a clear conflict between, you know, Jonah Hill and his side of things, and then the traditional scouts, the players,
and the manager.
And the manager,
Philip Seymour Hoffman is a manager.
May he rest in peace.
Yeah, playing, what was his name in the movie? I can't remember. I want to say Gordon Howe, but that doesn't sound
right. But he looked amazing.
Yeah.
Gordon Howe.
He had Art Howe.
He had the manager gut down.
Close crop hair. Uh-huh. I mean, he was just built in that movie to come out of the bullpen
and jab his finger into the chest plate of an umpire, mm-hmm, and say some things that, you know, aren't quite offensive, but are going to get you riled up.
Just don't call the guy a cocksucker.
Yep.
Don't call him a cocksucker.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, whatever, the one thing you can't call him. I think he called him a cocksucker.
Yeah. So this is nominated for 6 Oscars, including Best Picture, Best Actor, Best Supporting Actor. Brad Pitt and Jonah Hill were both nominated for Academy Awards.
It did not win Best Picture, did it?
It did not.
Didn't win anything, did it?
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
No, it didn't win any of the Oscars it was nominated for. It was the first of 2 nominations for Jonah Hill. He was nominated for this one and then Wolf of Wall Street. Mm-hmm. Started his ascent to being a serious actor. I'm curious to hear your guys' thoughts on the movie, because, I mean, it's like I've seen it many years ago. It'd been a while since I came back and watched it, so it's good to get back and revisit it. I enjoyed it. You know, I thought it was an intelligent, different take on a baseball movie from everything else we're going to watch for this whole series. So I'm curious to see. Again, I like to start with Travis just because it's like, it's like, for example, watching Sandlot, I was curious to see like the non-American perspective on the channel. I would love to hear somebody who doesn't follow baseball or sports, like, or different sports, to see what they think about the Sandlot and baseball and all that kind of, like, to see, because obviously other people in other countries are fanatical about soccer. You know, it's like, football. Does that translate to sports like baseball, which also have fanatical followings? But I'm just always curious to start with like the outside perspective. And so, Trav, what did you think of Moneyball?
Oh, I'm the outside perspective because I don't know baseball or give a shit about baseball or sports in general. Mm-hmm. But if all sports could like fight each other and like one die, like the first one for me would be baseball. But no.
even soccer?
Yeah, but they run around yelling, goal.
They don't because most of the time they just don't score. And it's like 0-0. Great game, everybody.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I prefer hockey with frequent fights and then also sliding.
That's true.
But Moneyball.
Can you explain icing to me?
Oh, wait. Is this a Pornhub search or what is...
It can be.
Like, you know what?
At this point, we should be sponsored by Pornhub.
No,
yeah,
we should put icing into Pornhub and just see what we get.
Oh, because
I think it's going to get messy.
Cinema Vino is brought to you by Squat Cobbler.
Cream pie surprise. ladies, frost yourselves.
Oh my!
With the pudding.
Whew. All right. Well. That was my only how to lose a guy in 10 days.
So that's how reference. So that was your thing about Moneyball was just frost yourselves.
Yeah.
All right.
So the first time I saw Moneyball, I was like, isn't this supposed to be about baseball? There was little to no baseball in it. And I was like, oh. So I got to the end. I'm like, well, I liked it, but it wasn't at all what I was expecting. But then I think I saw it again on TV and I was like, you know what? I really like this movie, actually.
Yeah.
I mean, there's, again, no little to no baseball actually in it. And I guess they actually use footage from the games.
Yeah. Yeah. I think especially when they're talking about, like, the streak and hitting the 20 games and signs unfurling.
And I did like the title cards, the chapters that came up, like the streak. And I think there were a couple more.
Makes it easy
I mean, they had some of the... milestone like games and stuff and the dates, but I thought that was interesting how they broke that up that way. But I really just liked just crunching the numbers, just looking at the stats. But you know, I thought it was interesting them finding the secret mini game, I guess, in baseball and like bringing that out more. And so I actually had rewatched this maybe a month ago, and so I did it again just tonight and. Every time I see it, I find I like it more and more. So this one gets high marks for me, despite not almost being, no baseball.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, kind of the same way with me. Is I actually didn't see this film when I might have first saw it, maybe like 3 years ago. I remember I think I watched The Big Short first, and I was like, oh man. And I think I must have seen the writer, and I was like, oh Moneyball. You know what? Fuck it. I should probably watch this. And the first thing I thought was like. Did the same director do this? Did not. But I liked it because there was still enough baseball in there to make it a baseball film. Because, like, I remember that streak. Like, I remember that whole, like, Oakland A's thing. I was like, oh, man, this is, like, kind of cool. Mm-hmm. I freaking love the movie. It is hard for me to say a baseball movie because it's based around baseball. But how often do they actually play baseball? Yeah. But I still freaking love it. And I would call it a baseball movie.
Yeah.
I love the acting in it. I think all the analytics around it all are just so badass because it's just amazing that a team was built that way. Mm-hmm. And I love the acting. I love the way it was filmed. I love the quips. I like Brad Pitt. I'm just going to say it. I don't think he's a great actor.
He really does.
He's a handsome man.
I don't think he's a great actor because there are some movies where I'm like, God damn, dude. But this one, he like fucking really kills it in. Like, yeah. I mean, like, I just liked him in this role.
Yeah.
The one thing I kind of forgot he was in this was Chris Pratt.
Mm-hmm.
Chris Pratt.
And I think I remember him saying, I thought he said, or one of his stories was, is that he actually auditioned for this role. And they actually told him, and this might have, not when he got super ripped, but he might have still, clearly it was Parks and Recs, and they were like, you got to lose weight for this. Mm-hmm. They're like, you can't have this role because you're too big.
Yeah.
Like, you don't look like a baseball player, which is kind of bullshit because we all...
We've
seen some chunkies.
There are some but like Chubbos usually play, like, catcher or, like,
first base.
Or think about Kirby Puckett. I mean...
Oh, yeah.
He's built like me.
Yeah.
So...
But it was...
Pitcher. Let us not forget Bartolo Colon.
Oh, God.
Or was it David Wells?
Oh, damn.
John Kruk.
I think I think it was Bartolo Colon who literally busted out of his belt mid batting. Like he was at bat and he broke his belt because he was so fat.
I love baseball so much.
Just say
nothing of Babe Ruth. Yeah,
exactly.
You know, think about Babe Ruth. I mean,
he was a hefty man.
No, they named a candy bar after him.
Yeah,
damn right.
But I love the film.
No,
and it is such an eye opening thing because I also just love the way it's filmed. Like you said, like the whole title card, like how it's. I don't know. I think this would be even. It reminded me so much of The Big Short, which I saw first.
Yeah,
but I love the film, and it is one of those ones where I could oddly watch again.
Yeah,
it's like I've only seen it twice, but I was like, man, I kind of forget how good this movie is.
It's got rewatchability.
Yeah, exactly. And I think I told Sean the other day, it's like my favorite line is when he's sitting there talking to David Justice and the batting thing, and he was like, oh, you know, I'm just here, and he's like, no, the Yankees are paying us to take you. Like, you know, and it's just like all these little things. I'm like, damn, that's so badass. Mm-hmm. And it was like, that's so true about, because you know, every time a fan watches something on the field or on the court and they watch it, you know, in their TV, there's all those little intricacies that go on in the front office, which fascinates me beyond the realm. It's like, I just love that little stuff that happens all in there. And I think that's why I love this film so much.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was, go for it.
No, I mean, I'll add on. I mean, like the scene where he's doing the trade, like orchestrating the trade for the trade.
Phone, yeah, I love that.
And he's
that.
Just like, and throw in soda for the clubhouse. Yeah. I'm just like, what? Yeah, for next 2 years, you're paying for the soda in our clubhouse.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's his version of the baseball movie. Like, that's him, like in the zone, like doing his, like,
yeah.
The rest of the time, he just sits back and is like, all right, let's see if the plan goes the way I think it's going to.
Yeah.
But seeing all the office politics was really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I'm going to try not to get too nerdy with this, but I have a degree in economics. I took a class in sports economics specifically, and this movie was very heavily referenced because this is one of the best like presentations of applicability of sports economics in 2011 at a time where like it was really starting to, you know, take hold. 2003, obviously, when this movie was taking place, the introduction of sabermetrics in baseball is a big turning point for sports because you have all this financial software, you have a lot of stuff like Stata, you know, being able to do a lot of analytics that you haven't been able to do before because the computer software hasn't really been there. The numbers have always been there, but the computer stuff hasn't been there.
Yeah.
And the reason it happened first in baseball is because there are so many statistics in baseball.
Yep.
If you look at every other sport, there's a lot of stuff that gets measured at like the team level, but baseball, there are so many things that are measured at the individual level. You have on base percentage, you have batting average, you have, you know, slugging percentage. There are just all these different numbers that have been tracked for a long time. And when you have that, you can plug all those numbers into a system and you can get a lot of good output.
Yeah.
And this is one of the best representations of sports analytics prior to what is now, you know, one of the most biggest industries. You know, if you look at like Pro Football Focus, the website, it's all about the analytics of, you know, getting the best value out of players based on their salary cap or what have you.
Yeah.
You know, and there was a big shift in mentality going from, you know, these old school guys like the scouts that were like, oh yeah, you know, I just don't like the look of him. You know, he's
the,
you know,
feel. Blah, blah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't have a good feeling about him.
And there was not like Todd said that, the Jonah Hill character was not a real character. He was a kind of amalgamation of multiple people, but Billy Beane was the one who introduced sabermetrics for the first time. It was Billy Beane. It wasn't anybody else. And, you know, what he did with the A's was impressive, but it also shows that there is kind of a cap to what you can do with analytics. So when you're chasing making the best team given your constraint or your scarcity, which in this case would be your salary, you still are limited by your salary. I mean, you might produce the best team per dollar, but that doesn't mean much if there are other teams that are just cranking out so much more money than you.
Yeah.
So if you look at teams like the Dodgers right now or the Yankees that are just throwing money at their teams constantly, you know, they might not have the best analytics, but if you just keep throwing money at the problem, you're going to have the best team.
Yeah.
So, you know, this, I think this movie was a great representation of that. I think seeing, you know, how this was a great portrayal of how it was hard to introduce metrics and how to, that fight with the manager of like, start this guy in this position because I tell you to, because it makes the most sense. And yeah, the manager being like, well, I don't like it, 'cause you know, he's not a lefty, or, mm-hmm, you know, he's not a good fit, or, you know, his elbow's thrown, like, fucking start the guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and it's that front office control versus the manager who actually controls the baseball team,
which I freaking love. That's why I think I like this film so much.
ASMR break.
Beautiful. I loved when he traded away the guy.
Oh yeah.
He was like, you're going to start my guy at first, and I'm going to trade away the person you like, yep, until you do. You know, it was the big balls move of, you know, just, I'm going to force your hand to do what I want you to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that he came into his office and then had the other guy, the Giambi's brother, like,
yeah,
and you're going to lose Giambi. Like, fired the guy in front of him.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, and then stood up, watched him walk out, and then took his chair.
Yep.
Like, I'm gonna smear my balls all over your office.
But at the same time, I like that this movie kind of kept Billy Bean as a baseball player who does have superstition. You know, he doesn't watch the games. He's, yep, always,
exactly,
he's always driving.
Yeah.
And when he comes to the streak, the one game he finally, yep, does come to, and he kind of checks in on, they start losing.
Yep.
You know, I don't know if that actually happened in history. I don't think it did.
Yeah.
It was a good movie moment, yeah, but
the voiceover after that, where it was like, where the guy's like, this is shows a fundamental flaw in what the A's are trying to do. For some reason, I always think whoever that guy is that's commentating is like Ice-T. He sounds like Ice-T, huh, to me. I don't know.
Yeah.
Every time I'm like, is that Ice-T?
And I thought he sounded a little bit like Stuart Scott, like the old ESPN guy.
Oh, yeah. Rest in peace.
Yeah. I thought he sounded a little bit like him. I couldn't quite place him, but he sounded a little bit like Stuart Scott.
Also, like Robin Wright or Robin Wright Penn, like, great fucking actress. Horribly underutilized.
Yeah.
She's in,
yeah,
like two scenes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then Spike Jones.
Yeah.
Did great as the stepdad, the little girl.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I forget that he's in that.
I'm sorry. We just, we didn't consult you on that decision, but, yeah, you know, we'll be sure to consult you in the future.
Mm-hmm. Also, are we all going to
fuck off, Steve,
the little girl's song at the end? I actually looked that up. I was like, was, wait, did this kid's, like, guy's kid actually write this song? I know this song.
We didn't sing the song at the end of League of Their Own, so.
Yeah. I did.
That was great discipline on my part.
Sang that off mic. Oh.
Yeah.
I didn't realize.
You serenaded recording us.
And a little bit off key, so.
Yeah. Well, Todd forgot to record.
That's my fault.
But yeah, I think this movie is a really good demonstration of a paradigm shift in sports, mm-hmm, that came, yep, with, you know, technology and with analytics. And, you know, if you're really into sports analytics, there's a lot of podcasts I can recommend. But Pro Football Focus is a really great website. Above the Cap is another good one.
It is amazing because most of it nowadays, I mean, this was like the start of it. Mm-hmm. And I guess this is America, and we do follow, sadly, football's king still. It's like college and pro.
Yeah.
So when you hear about analytics and most of it comes to the football, and it really is, like, so interesting to hear when they were like, because I still listen to a few radio shows where they'll be like, the analytics always say one thing, but especially in football, coaches almost always do the other. They're always going to go with their gut.
Yep.
Like that's the one thing, because, you know, baseball, there is just so much information. But it's like in football, like, well, you have a 53% chance of getting this 2-point conversion, mm-hmm, you know? And it was, yeah, like,
so for the 2-point
conversion. Yeah. And it was like, it's like
that,
it's
chance,
like,
of winning.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it's like, okay, well, I don't know. It's just so crazy that, like, I feel like baseball analytics can be used the most.
Baseball is such a, it's a one player versus one, yep, player game. Yep. Yeah, at the end of the day, it's a batter versus a pitcher, you know, and it's about building a roster, and you're analyzing things at a macro level of, like, I'm building the best roster to, on average, get me the most runs per player per game, yep, per salary. You know, football, it's more situational, where it's like,
situational.
You know, it's less like rules of averages, and it's more like, okay, statistically, what's going to get me the best, what have you.
Anyway, Todd, what'd you think?
I mean, I enjoyed it both times I've seen it. I've seen it twice, at least twice, maybe three times. I, like you said, I've got more out of it every time. I love Aaron Sorkin as a writer. You can really feel his influence on this.
I'm a fan.
Especially in the scene where Billy Bean first introduces the sabermetrics to the scouts in their team meeting.
I love that, yeah.
And he just starts just dismantling everything they're saying. You know, they're trying to introduce, because it's like, yeah, I think the old school was to was to look at statistics and then go with your gut, go with your hunch.
Yeah.
Like, I kept thinking, I was like, there's a nicer way to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Instead of, but he just wanted to shit on everybody.
Well, yeah. The classic example from economics was Babe Ruth of opportunity cost, because Babe Ruth had not just the best batting average of the team, he was also the best pitcher. But you can't have the best pitcher be the best batter in every game. So where do you get the most value out of him? Do you get the most value out of him as a full-time pitcher or as a full-time batter? And then doing one or the other is going to cause you opportunity cost.
Yeah.
Oh, and I found out in this movie what a five-tool player was. I had never heard the term before.
It means he has five different dicks.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a common baseball thought.
Google search that. Yeah, at home,
it's a common
but, baseball. But five parts player is they can throw, they can run, they can hit, and they can hit with power, and they can field, right?
They can fly, they can fight,
and they can
crow.
Honestly, why haven't we done Hook yet? You're doing it, Peter.
And, I mean,
it is you.
That was on our list of Christmas movies. I don't know if you classify that as a Christmas movie.
Yeah. No.
I mean, because it does take place over Christmas, so. Huh. But I don't know if it's a Christmas movie. I don't know, if, like, where you put it.
I guess we do have something in common. We're orphans.
Very heavily quoted movie, too. But where would, I mean, is that a fantasy movie? I mean,
we'll fit that in somewhere. Yeah. We'll find a way.
Mm-hmm.
We'll shimmy then.
That's what my prom date said. So.
Shimmy. A lot of prom. A lot of prom references. It is prom season.
French accent and prom. I'm leading heavy into both bits.
Yeah.
So going
guaranteed to get laid.
Oh, you take your corsage.
Oh, oui, oui, Beaujolais.
You truffle-eating pig.
Yes, I enjoyed it. I would say I would give this probably an 8 or 9 out of 10. I mean, this is probably 4 out of 5.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. I don't know. What would you guys say?
I would say like...
I want to say an 8.
I said 8. Yeah, I was a 7.5, 8, but I think 8.
Yeah.
I agree to an 8.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good movie.
Consensus.
Yeah. Strong.
Came out of nowhere, and it pleasantly surprised me.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't sure what... Kind of like the first time I saw 13th Warrior, I was pissed there wasn't a real dragon. I was like, well, this is bullshit.
Yeah.
And the second time I saw it, I was like, oh, all right, I know what we're here for now.
Yeah. You know dragons aren't real, right?
Look, I'm not going to argue about this with you again.
We've been through this before.
dinosaurs are dragons. We don't know that they couldn't breathe either.
Plants are also science.
Yeah.
Plants are also science.
I would say that if you could get like Steven Zaillian and Aaron Sorkin to write a script about pretty much anything, it's going to be a pretty good movie. That's going to be pretty interesting.
Did you guys ever see, Todd, I know you didn't like it, but Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip? It was kind of an SNL type deal. Like, it came out the same year as 30 Rock.
With 30 Matthew Rock. Perry?
Yeah.
And woof, woof.
Yeah.
Oh, I liked it.
Two seasons?
One, I think.
One season? Yeah.
Yeah.
They did one and done. Because it came out the same year as 30 Rock, and they were both kind of like an SNL skit spoof. Show. But, one was clearly better than the other.
And it's like Aaron Sorkin's was more like the Aaron Sorkin slant of the dialogue and the riffs.
He wrote that?
Mm-hmm. But then it's like 30 Rock was more like the Tina Fey, who was actually the head writer for SNL. So it not only had that sort of she's been there, but also kind of that absurdist, off-the-wall humor that, you know, kind of connected. And it had Alec Baldwin in maybe his best performance ever.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. But anyway, this has been another episode of Cinema Vino.
Yes.
Part 4 of our baseball series. And next coming up is going to be something great. It's going to be an all-time comedy.
Oh.
Baseball. It's one of Sean's favorites.
Yeah, for something different.
What is it?
Fucking Major League.
Yeah. Major League 3, back to the minor.
We're
not doing Major League. It's Major League 3.
Major League is tasty. So. Yeah. Great cast.
I want you to know that I saw that movie, which again, my parents, very questionable, because I saw that as a fucking child.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, oh my God. I looking back, I'm like, my parents just let me watch this? I was like, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, that's how I feel about the movie Spawn.
Yeah. Well, I haven't seen that in a hot minute.
Was
John Leguizamo?
Yeah.
Is that right? Yeah.
Was damn it. And major, wait a minute. Nope. Forget everything I said. I was going to get Major League mixed up with Hot Shots.
Part two.
Very easy.
Never mind. Mm-hmm. Yeah. 86, everything I was about to say.
But yeah, that's coming up. It's going to be good stuff. And yeah, we got Sean Jordan.
Hey.
And Taylor Owens.
That's me.
And Travis Budd.
Hey. Last again.
And I am Todd. So we will see you guys next time. Not with a bang, but with a whimper. Is that right?
Fuck off.
Okay.
Not with the crack of the bat.
Mattingly and Canseco.
Be sure to listen, rate, and subscribe at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast. Our website is at cinemavino.net, and reviews of these movies can be found at toddwoffordmovies.com. Thank you.